Like many other fundamentally shy and awkward teenagers, both before and since, I'd realized that joining the band could be a shortcut to the kind of local status and prestige I dreamed of. I was uncertain about my looks, being a skinny, flat-chested, slightly androgynous girl, and thought I had a better chance of making an impact if I became someone. And being in a band surely made you a someone. Welcome, everybody. My name is Christian Overfield.
And I am Martha Guzman, and we are the hosts of the Rockstar Autobiography Podcast.
Join us every so often as we review autobiographies by the greatest and most famous musicians in the history of rock and roll. That segment is a portion of a book from Ms. Tracy Thorne, titled Bedsit Disco Queen. She is more famously known for a band called Everything But the Girl. We read the book. This was Martha's pick. I'm sure our listeners are starting to sense, you know, who picked what. They had to guess, you know.
What do you mean?
I'm sure, well, I mean, I think that if they would know that you picked this. I think they would start, yeah. It's not a criticism. I'm just, you know, people are patterns.
No, I know.
Well, Martha picked it. She apparently is a fan of Everything But the Girl. Would you like to begin, Martha, and discuss your experience with this band and in this book?
Yes. So I was, I really wanted to read this book because, as Christian said, I am a fan of Everything But the Girl. But I will say this, I came to them when Missing was released. So when the album Walking Wounded was released, that's when I discovered them. Later finding out that they'd had a lot of music behind them, but I wasn't really familiar with that. I heard Missing one day as I was driving, and I liked it. And soon I started hearing it more and more. And when the album was finally released, I bought it. And in 1996, I think it's fair to say that I probably heard that album almost every day, if not every day, once it came out. I absolutely loved it. I think it's perfect from beginning to end, and I love her voice. So when I saw that she had a book, I thought that we should read it, and here we are.
Oh, here we are. Okay. I remember them from that album when it came out.
Yes.
Because it had such a cool cover. I really, really struck by how neat it was. And I kind of wanted to, I wanted to like it. And she says in the book that had they known that Everything But the Girl was going to be successful, that they would have come up with a much better band name. I always thought it was a great title for a band. A really good one.
Yes.
I just never got into, I've tried. I put on, back in the day, it was, when that album came out, it was when Virgin Megastore and others, they would, built into the infrastructure of the store is when, you know, you could put the headphones on and listen to, like, about 18 albums they'd picked, you know, and this was one of them. And I wanted to like it. It just never did much for me. So I never got into them. And that was obviously their peak, their apex. That's as much as I know about Everything But the Girl and Miss Tracy Thorne. Martha, did you like the book?
Yes, I really enjoyed it. I think that I love the way that she starts from the very beginning, just sort of giving you a little bit of background about herself. And I think that that paragraph that we started the episode with really carries throughout. Even though at eventually they do reach this level of fame, you know, she always feels as though maybe she doesn't quite belong. And I felt that that was the recurring theme in the book, that she's always questioning, you know, whether they should be doing what they're doing, what kind of music they should really be playing. But I enjoyed it. I really think that we got into her head, which I always like when these artists allow us a little bit of insight into what they're thinking and what they're feeling. And I felt that she did a really good job at letting us into all of that. And so I really enjoyed it a lot. And I don't know if it's the stage of life that I'm also in, but it really resonated with me in some ways. And I really enjoyed it.
Okay, well, thank you, Martha, for your review of the book that you recommended that we read. I loved it.
Yes.
Probably one of the top three, like, super bright, smart people that's ever produced a book. And I felt like it. I don't know how to compliment the book without sounding like I'm complimenting myself and us, because she was an English major. And
yes,
yeah, it felt like somebody from one of our classes decided to start a band, and she went on to pursue a PhD, some advanced degree in whatever it is in England for English, and yes. She spends a lot of her time reading Victorian literature and just literature period, and it's super weird to read about somebody whose career happens without, you know, those plants that require very little maintenance. Her career felt like that. It felt like she just didn't have to do much for it ever at any time. And she always, with any of her bands, had some kind of success. And even when the band broke with that crazy remix, you know, she didn't really have anything to do with it except for writing the sketch of the song. And all the while she's got this successful career, she's a full-time student at these universities and writing papers. And that she's got the time to write all of these papers, and probably extremely well written, because the book is really articulate and thoughtful. It really kind of felt reader proof in the sense that she's such a good analyst of her own experience, and such a good she's so thoughtful about her experience that you almost don't feel necessary to it, which I mean is a compliment. It's just so well written, very nuanced, very smart, bright.
To me, it was right up there with my crush's book, Brett Anderson.
Yes, it reminded me of that.
Yeah, that's how it felt to me, too. I felt that you could tell that the person who wrote this book was well-read.
Super
you could
well-read.
Tell. Yeah, you could just, it just jumped at you from the page. So I really liked it. And I think that it's nuanced. It's got everything, right? And mm-hmm. so, I was also when I read that, you know, she went on to pursue a master's in English literature, and then she tried to pursue a PhD, but I don't think she totally did that. But mm-hmm. she started to. I thought, oh, okay, this is starting to make a little bit more sense. And you know, interestingly enough, part of the reason that I love Walking Wounded as much as I do, and you know me, I'm big on lyrics, right? And mm-hmm. so. Part of the reason that I love that album as much as I do is because the lyrics to me whenever I hear a song that's really well written, I always wish I would have written it because it oftentimes expresses things that I have felt or that, you know, I mean, that's music though, right? I mean, that's part of the reason that we all love it so much because there's something to it that resonates with you. But after reading her book and reading about her, it further kind of cemented it for me as to why I have loved her lyrics so much always. And I felt, you know, they're thoughtful and it's who she is, right? And so I thought, okay, this now makes all the more sense to me as to why that album in particular just resonated with me in such a deep way. Because if you listen to the lyrics are just so great. I mean, the music's great. I mean, that whole album is just, to me, it's perfect. But it made more sense after having read the book.
So this is one of those books where she sprinkles full, complete song lyrics throughout.
Yes.
I skipped every single one. I just, you know, we and I have had this conversation before. It's funny though, in real time, right now, as I opened up to a random song, I see that she's mentioned Edwin Collins in the lyrics of one of the songs. I don't know if you know that. So,
yes.
You know, I want to get to that part. This might be one of the most interesting books to Martha and me, because she is successful simultaneously. She's a fan of all these people that you and I admire.
Yes.
And she becomes, I had no idea that any of that was coming. She becomes friends with so many people at ground zero. And
yes.
Most of the people we've read about, they see bands at ground zero, but they don't become friends with them.
Yes.
But she, like tons of people we've read about, she's going to tons of gigs. But she befriends these people. She starts a band instantly. And again, she says that, boy, if you just, there's something about the punk ethos that made you feel like instead of watching, this is something you could be doing and that you wanted to be doing. And I just, that's going to resonate with me every single time. So that's why she starts, like many other people, a band. And I feel like there's something really unique to that time.
Although what she does also say is that she really wasn't a part of the punk movement. She comes to it later because she was much younger when that all started. And so the thing that she does say is, you know, you would think that I had been a part of it because of how much she gravitated to it and how much she soon becomes a fan of all of that music. And so it carries with her. It carries through with her. And so, as Christian said, she does decide to start a band at the age of 15, which she does with two other girls. And for essentially the reasons that she shares at the beginning, right? What Christian read, that paragraph where she felt awkward and different. And so again, like most people who feel as an outsider, she thought, okay, a band will make me cool. A band will make all of these things about me that make me feel so different, cool, and make me maybe have. And something we also have heard so much from men is, you know, they start a band as a way to attract women, right? And so in her case, she said, well, you know, it was also as a way to maybe see if boys would be attracted to her. But as we have always learned, it doesn't necessarily work the same with women as it does with men.
It does not. She does a thing that I've always admired in people. I don't know if I should, but she's told to come join a band or audition for one. I think just straight up join. And because the idea is that she can play the guitar, but she can't at all, really. She owns a guitar. But see, I'm such a rule follower, Martha. If somebody said, you want to join my band? I'd say, yeah, but I can't play the guitar. I would be honest. I wouldn't say, sure, yeah, of course I can do that. If fib and lie, like so many actors do. You're like, oh, I can juggle. Sure, of course. Yeah. Just give me the job. I just, some people are hardwired to just say yes. They just want the opportunity so much. They're hungry for it. They don't let this fear of the fact that they have no idea what they're doing get in the way. So something about the punk thing kind of, she carries throughout her experience in this book, kind of a punk ethos.
Yes.
But when I listen to her music, it is the way the critics describe it, Martha, is exactly how it seems to me. It is Sade light, 100%. And there is not an ounce of punk in sight anywhere. It's all just so polite.
Yes.
And so there's nothing about it that takes a risk or a chance to me. And that's why it's just so, it's so pleasant. I think she's, somebody calls it like dinner chill, something like that, like music design. And I thought that was generous, but yeah, it is definitely meant for Pottery Barn in the background, or it's because it's so not aggressive. It's so not confrontational. It's just pleasant, including her voice, which I do like. I do like her voice.
I really like her voice. And she says, you know, she's not the best singer, but she has a uniqueness, which I completely agree with. And I personally love her voice because it is unique. And I really enjoy listening to her. And so, you know, when she talks about her voice, because she does, and she criticizes it, saying, you know, it's not the best. I know that I'm not the best singer. I have a singing voice, but I'm a singer, but I'm not, you know, I don't have the best singing voice, which I love her voice so much that I disagree with that statement, right? But yes,
Well, she hits the nail on the head. She articulates it and says that you don't have to, like, you know what? She, to me, seemed like a female Morrissey. She even looked like him, I thought, in those early pictures. And just like Morrissey, when the Smiths started having some success, somebody said, hey, why don't you go take some voice lessons? Now that this thing seems to be panning out, go take voice lessons. So he went. And if there's one thing I cannot imagine is Morrissey taking criticism or instruction from a classically trained voice instructor. And, you know, he goes to one lesson. He's like, forget this. Right. And she does the same thing. She goes, and because she realizes, and I think it's very astute, that a successful band just needs to have a unique singer.
Yes.
And that's it. And that's why, you know, and even if it some people dislike it, there's something there to like or dislike. But it can't be just be generic. It can't. There's a million people who can sing, but that therefore makes them all irrelevant and of no value. You need something that's a little unique.
Yes, she does have that. Absolutely.
That's why it's disappointing to me that, so, you know, the music is so, it's all fine to me, but it just doesn't go to the next level. To me, what was really interesting, Martha, I didn't realize, is that she had two bands, both of which were successful in the coolest way.
Yes.
So it made me want to really dig into the first band she was in called, was it Marine Girls, right?
Marine Girls.
I think that's a great title, too.
Yes, that's her very first band when she's a teenager.
Right, and so they just produce all these like raw demos and 7-inches, and all of these things make an impact on it was kind of like a Dean Wareham-esque. That was her Galaxy 500. But in this case, her band Luna really, you know, had some success. And some people really, really like the first band a lot. And she says, I love the description she gives of just being out in the world, slightly bored. She always looks like just going to these appearances on Top of the Pops or anything else is just sort of, you know, just like, this is what I'm doing this afternoon and people giving me makeup. And she gives a great description of how.
And I love that. Yeah. I love that it's always very much like, okay, I just got to do this.
Yeah.
It's always very matter of fact.
It is.
And there was something about that I really enjoyed reading, I have to say.
It's like an English major who is just thrust into this world. It's totally drama free. There is just not an ounce of any shrill or shrieks or any Mariah Diva. It's just this girl who likes to read books, and now she's on the set for Top of the Pops, and all these people approach her to say, they crawl up to her just to say, hey, I just want to let you know that Marine Girls are like the greatest band of all time. So much, I didn't know this, but she says, and it's true, that Kurt Cobain lists two of Marine Girls' songs, I think, as the greatest songs ever recorded. And they're listed in his, you know, you can buy that book of his journals and diary and so forth. And, you know, I've always been fascinated, Martha, by the cause and effect of all these things we read about, music and, you know.
Yes. And, of course.
Right. So
connecting all those dots.
I love this dot. I mean, this was a crazy one to read about. I had to read it twice to go, wow, that's so cool. So I guess somebody in England who likes Marine Girls decides to move to the United States of America and goes to Seattle. And that person starts Sub Pop. Which is at the core and the creation of the grunge movement, and explains how
my gosh,
Kurt Cobain even heard of this band. Because, you know, he never would have otherwise. How else would he have gotten his hands on these weirdo tapes? And Courtney Love equally goes up to Tracy Thorne and says the same thing. Like, you guys are the greatest. You're Marine Girls. They have every album. And she's just sort of bemused that these songs that she just sort of put together with friends in her bedroom have such an impact. And, okay, real quick, Martha.
Real quick, and that was just the thing. When they start Marine Girls, she talks about how they're writing and recording daily.
Yeah.
Because it's something just so fun for them to do that they're not doing anything other than recording and writing these songs. You know, I love this part where, you know, there was something about her, Christian, mine is the rock star part of it, that I really, that just really resonated with me personally. She talks about how she's such a diary and journal writer, right? She's constantly writing in a diary. And soon when she starts becoming obsessed with music, those diary entries become song lyrics. And so she's writing daily. She's writing songs daily along with the two other girls. And they're recording daily. And as Christian said, in her bedroom. I mean, this is where this music is coming from. It doesn't get more raw than that. Mm-hmm. And so And yet they end up having such a huge impact, unbeknownst to her, yeah, obviously, at that time. But later, as she becomes Tracy Thorne, you know, she starts hearing about that from people that are very famous.
I like that she's totally, you know, Martha and I are, when we have absolutely no technical abilities, I think we've expressed that we can barely turn on, answer a phone. And so to read about Tracy Thorne, who's exactly the same way, all she can do, I like how when she decides to sort of get back into music again, she purposely gets an 8-track recorder because it's the most basic thing. And she realizes, well, okay, I can master that. That I can master. I get a tape recorder, basically. I really love that about her.
Me too. That's what I loved about this book too. Yeah. She is so honest at all times. Yeah. You don't get any sense of pretense about anything. No, she's just giving it to you straight. Yeah. She's just giving it to you straight.
So,
oh my God.
I was super excited because it's the first time ever. It was really interesting to me. The Marine Girls never entered my consciousness, but I'm a huge...
Neither me. I never knew about them until reading this book.
But I'm a huge, as I've told you, Edwyn Collins fan, who was...
Yes.
His first band was Orange Juice. And to see that, when the Marine Girls opened for Orange Juice, and to see that poster, and to realize, I've seen that poster before, Martha, but I never... Marine Girls meant nothing to me. But now
until now.
Oh my gosh, she got to open... For Orange Juice.
Right.
And she tells the story that they're just so laid back. They don't show up for sound check except maybe like 20 minutes before they're supposed to go on.
And they get yelled at.
Oh, yeah. They're like, what are you doing, you crazy weirdos? You're supposed to be here hours ago. And
well, again, they didn't know.
Yeah,
they didn't know what a sound check was.
They're like,
oh,
really? Sorry about that. What do you want? Can we borrow whatever it is we need to borrow? And they're almost kicked off the gig until Edwyn Collins, I guess, intervenes. Okay, so that's one criticism I have of the book, though, is I wish that she had just gone a little more into specifics. Just once in a while, give me a quote. Give me an anecdote of the conversation you had. You're telling me Edwyn Collins saved the day. Give me just a little bit more. Like, what was that interaction like? When she talks about the boys that she was trying to get to like her, she doesn't tell Charlie who they are, or she doesn't really go that next step. Ever into a lot of these anecdotes that I really wanted to know just a little bit more about. That was a kind of an ongoing complaint because it was well written. And I'm like, I just wish it had gone that extra layer because I'm sure that would have been really well written. But she doesn't quite go that far typically, ever.
No, she doesn't. I think it's just the one thing that I didn't notice about her book throughout. Again, it's just so matter of fact.
Yeah.
And she's just telling you this happened, that happened. And I agree. I think that there are moments in the book where some details are not
fleshed out as
deeply as mm-hmm. maybe we would have liked. But then there are other moments where she really does go into more detail. And I feel a lot of it is, you know, stuff that's in her head. It sounds like she's in her head
which
I also really appreciated and I was able to relate to. And in those moments where she's really in her head, she really goes into detail about those things mm-hmm. that are, you know, that she's thinking about. And but then again, there's those others where it's just, well, she just seems as a very matter of fact type of person based on this book. And so I think that was probably why some of those moments perhaps weren't detailed as much as we maybe would have liked them to have been. But overall, it didn't stop me from loving the book.
Yeah, she doesn't seem to give more value to those incidences than she does when she's a stay-at-home mom taking her kids to school. She relates all of these experiences sort of as if they're equal. And
correct.
That was the first.
Which I really appreciated. Yeah. Which I really appreciated because she doesn't put that much weight on her fame. She just seems like she just happened to be someone that this happened to almost.
Yeah.
Even though she really wanted to be a singer and she was so obsessed with music and all of these mm-hmm. things, it's almost like she didn't expect for things to happen. And you kind of get that feeling throughout the book that all of this just sort of happened to her. And that she, you know, she wanted to do all of the things that she's done, but it was almost as though it was never for the sake of fame, but rather because she just wanted to get these things out of her and her writing and all of that.
So it was super amazing to read. First of all, she seemed to have two careers. I didn't realize she'd been around that long. So she's there for Orange Juice. She's there. I didn't realize it went back that far because she had a success in the 90s, 96. And she still seemed really young. But apparently, I'm sure you were just over the moon to read this. She becomes friends with the Smiths right when the Smiths are beginning. And I had no idea. Yes. And it was amazing. She did seem to finally let out a little starstruckness. And she said,
yes, because they were huge fans. They were huge fans.
She explains that they're able to somehow walk this fine line of being fans and also manage to be friends because they themselves have just enough success and fame to kind of, you know, suggestively be on the same pedestal. You know, they're not as big as the Smiths, but, you know, they're in the same field and they're doing their thing together. You know, the Smiths, their microbrew is just more successful. But, you know, the Marine Girls are Everything But the Girl at that time. I forget which it was. You know, so they've got their own and they can share that.
Everything But the Girl at this point. Oh, right. They're
backstage and they're buddies with Morrissey and Johnny. That just blew my mind. The way she casually says that her Ben is just hanging out with Johnny Marr all the time while he goes guitar shopping with his newfound money. See, that it bothered me. Like, tell me more. Because you're friends with the Smiths while the Smiths were writing those songs. You know, not after the fact, but during it, at the beginning, and all those early gigs. That was so amazing to read about. And she says that basically she and Morrissey start exchanging. Totally makes sense because she seems, you know, like such a literary person like Morrissey. It makes sense that the two of them would get along and write like these postcards to one another.
Yes. And about Morrissey, she says, I want to read this. She says, I loved Morrissey with a devotion which outweighed anything I'd felt for a rock singer before and which I now blush to recall.
What a great sentence. What a great sentence.
Yes. And I related to that. Yes. And I think for many of us who were our Smiths fans, I think that's a true statement for many of us, right? That many of us felt that way about him, where we just loved him with a devotion unlike any other that we'd ever felt for any other rock star. And so I think she does a really good job at summarizing what that felt, not just for her, but for many of us. And she talks about how she falls in love with them, so much so that, you know, I think both she and Ben start following them on tour. And that's how they become good friends with them.
Yeah, her that paragraph description of the Smiths and what it was like on stage, it's so accurate, so apt about how sexy and but also vulnerable and humorous. And it's just a brilliant, probably the single best succinct description of the appeal of the Smiths I've ever read. And I couldn't absolutely get my, so I know I shared the same feeling. We both did. Like, it's the most devotion we've ever had. But we felt that way without ever meeting Morrissey. I cannot imagine to have those feelings and then also to have this guy in your life and who welcomes you into his house once in a while. That was a lot. But I'm convinced there's no way he really liked. There's no way Morrissey's a Everything But the Girl fan turning on that music.
I disagree. I think that he really did. And I think in part of it is you also have to remember that this is a time when it wasn't Everything But the Girl, you know, Walking Wounded era.
I think
era.
He
this
liked maybe the earlier stuff, but there's no way he liked the successful
this
stuff.
This is in the early mid 80s. You know, their music is very much I loved what she says, and let's talk about this as well, because, you know, she talks about how people didn't really know how to categorize their music, right? So they're recording all these tapes, they have all this music, and people aren't really quite sure what to make of it. One thing that really stood out to me as a huge fan of Sade, she talks about when they're recording their first album, and as Everything But the Girl, and she says that, you know, they want it because they really didn't know, the record company didn't really know how to categorize them, nor how to place them. They thought maybe they could be there was this like new jazz type mm-hmm. music sound coming out. And she talks about how they're recording their first album next door to where Sade is recording her very first album. And she says, you know, they were gorgeous. They looked yeah. like models. They were so stylish. And then there we were. We were nothing like Sade. But I get that. I get why it was so difficult to categorize yeah. them because, yeah, like you said, I mean, their music was different and it wasn't quite so much that Sade sound. She talks about how they're also thinking that maybe they're like the Style Council, but they're not really quite yeah. that either. And so, interestingly enough, they end up meeting Paul Weller of the Style Council. At this point, the jam has split up. Paul Weller is doing new music as part of the Style Council, and they meet him. I mean, talk about, like you said, I mean, they're meeting all of these people right at that moment when they're at the peak of becoming, right, something even bigger. I mean, granted, Paul Weller had already had success with the jam, but with mm-hmm. Style Council, I mean, that's, you know, this is all music that, like you said, I really like. I'm a big fan of the Style Council as well. And so just to hear about how Paul yeah. Weller invites them to play with him too. And they open for him, right? I think they open for, or no, he joins them on stage for one of their songs. And what I thought was really funny is that at one point, you know, she says that Paul Weller greets them and says, you know, I'm here. And she says, you know, he comes dressed so fashionably and he just looks so great. And he looks at her and he says, oh, you're wearing that?
Love it.
And I thought, oh my gosh. Yeah. And so they get to meet another one of their heroes, which is Paul Weller.
Yeah, all of them just kind of casually adopt everything but the girl and Tracy Thorn. I don't think it's difficult. In America, we don't really have a sense of Paul Weller and his stature. But in England, obviously, it's much bigger.
It's huge.
Much bigger than it is here. So much so that she gives a great detailed explanation of when Paul Weller joins them on stage. That was one of the most detailed stories she shares in the whole book about how electric it is and people gasp when he comes on stage, like they can't believe it. And then she tells a charming story of how she herself doesn't have a recording of it. So she buys a bootleg of her own gig and the guy selling it to her looks at her like, this is so surreal. I'm selling you your own gig. Is this like, okay, is this really you? Are you buying your own?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's so awesome. I just love her. I just love her. There's no airs about her. She's just as much of a fan as the rest of us. She's just so cool. I just really, really love this book.
She seemed most herself actually when she decides, and that's the most un-rock and roll moment ever we've ever read. They've had this big hit album that no one could have predicted. They didn't. Huge, huge success. And they've just been asked by, who is it? It's not the Rolling Stones. U2. U2. Oh my God. I hate U2.
Our dear U2, friend just, Bono. They'll just
try to suck the juice dry out of anything that they think is cool, man. So they've been asked to be the opener. And I would personally, Martha, I would never want to be an opener for anybody else's big tour. No one's there to see you. Even though it's a big crowd, it seems so unsatisfying.
Right.
And so, but everyone's right, like, this right. is gigantic. It's U2. And what are you going to do? And she says, yeah, I think actually I want to just quit the band now. Just want to bring it to an end and start growing things in my garden. And I thought it was the coolest move ever. And it's just so,
me too.
She really seems to like then become her most herself when she starts raising her kids and hanging out with moms and just doing that thing for years on end. Oh, I knew you were going to love that. You must have been so excited, Martha.
Who ends up one day as she's hanging out with other moms? And she's sitting
suddenly
there, and they see a Range Rover
coming
by.
And what happens? What happens to the window, Martha?
And then the window rolls down, and there's this
Greek
handsome
man.
Greek man with sunglasses and stubble,
right.
and says, Tracy, yeah, Tracy, hi Tracy, how are you? And George, it's George Michael. Michael. I mean, yeah. Come on.
How often does that happen? Such what a perfect life to live.
How often does that?
I get to just be anonymous, I loved it. Raise my kid and grow potatoes, and once in a while, people.
George Michael yeah. stops by and his yeah. ranger stops his ranger.
Yeah, you get a sense all these people like but, George Michael. It just felt super safe around this woman. I mean, this woman does not want anything from us, you know? So it's so easy to be yes. myself and just say hi to her, you know? Because she's right. just not hungry for anything, obviously.
Right. And she, and because she's really not. I mean, and you get that sense throughout the book. And, you know, I thought it was also just very telling of how, you know, the story is really hers and Ben's, right? Her mm-hmm. husband, who, when they first meet, they meet in college. And she talks about how at that moment, you know, they were so different in terms of what they were like they from the outside. But then she talks about how they were complete soulmates and it was music that really brought them together. But you get the sense that he trusts her so much that, you know, that moment where that decision is made about not joining U2 mm-hmm. for this tour and all of these things, he really just lets her yeah. make that decision and says, you know, she talks about how she says, you know, I think if it would have been up to Ben, we probably yeah. would have done it, but he trusts me and in my instinct. And when I say that it's probably best if we don't do it, he doesn't fight me with it and he agrees. And you get the feeling that he is, that they're both equally supportive yeah. of one another and the choices that they make, because, you know, she wants to stay home. And but even then she talks about how she has these feelings of, do I really want to do this? Do I really want to go? She's on the one hand, she is settled in this new life once she has children. But then she wonders if it's something that she should really be wanting, or if maybe she should start writing again, because people right. are asking her, so what are you doing? You know, she goes to award shows, she goes to events, and other musicians ask her, so Tracy, what are you doing? What have you been doing? And when she answers, oh, I've been home raising my kids. Oh, well, that's great, but do you want to do more? Do you want to come back to music? And she's kind of torn in that. But on the other hand, Ben is out there doing his thing and DJing and opening clubs. He starts his own label. And so she talks about how she feels privileged to be in a position where she is able to still sort of have a foot into the music world and also have this regular life where she can pretty much go unrecognized. Although she does talk about an instance where one of her children goes to her and says, her kids really don't have a sense of the fact that she was in a band unless they're out and about sometimes and people come and ask her for an autograph or things like that. And when her son tells her, you know, were you in a band before? Because my teacher says that she has all your music. And so
yeah, I love that. I yeah. love that. You know what I loved? There was so much going on in that moment because the teachers kept it to herself and played it yes. cool. Because she has to. She, yes. You know, but I just love that little reveal that there's all these layers happening. The kid doesn't know. The teacher hasn't said. The mom hasn't shared. And you've got all these weird realities converging in one little
absolutely,
moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was what was so cool about it, right? The fact that she manages to be so normal. And yet, you know, she's had... And I find that so unique, Christian, because I feel that so many musicians have a really difficult time balancing that, right? Mm-hmm. And for her, it just seems so easy to, yeah. it seems so easy to walk away from
yeah.
when she walks away from it. And she didn't give it a second thought. Nope, I just decided to do this. And I have to be honest, I kind of envied that ability to just walk away from this job. Technically, this is her job, right? And it's a job that she's just kind of over. And I mean, how many of us right. would want to, at moments, you know, just walk away from a job and be like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go in and do this. But, you know, she's also in a position where she was able to do that. So that's the difference as well. But yeah, I thought it was, I just found her story to be so, it's like the calmest memoir we've read, Christian, I felt, right? it was calm.
Yeah, it was. It was very calm. It was like having a cup of tea. Yeah. She didn't except really...
Except for when Ben's in the hospital.
Right.
And that was very emotional and very stressful when he goes, you know, they're trying to figure out what's wrong with him and he's ill repeatedly. And that was very emotional to read. I felt too. It was really emotional for me. Mm-hmm. But aside from that moment of his health scare and all that, it's a very calm book.
Right. Well, the crisis was not something that they created out of
just
human boredom or weird desires or anything like that. Yeah. I like it when she's applying to college, whatever advanced level, and the people who I guess they're interviewing her say, aren't you in a band? Like, like a famous band? Are you what?
That's when she goes back to get her master's degree.
They're like, do you think you're gonna have time for all this? She's like, probably.
And she talks about how this was so awesome. I felt she talks about how, you know, she's in the band and stuff, but yet she's reading and writing papers simultaneously. And
we're never gonna read about a man doing that. Never. Yeah, he's turning down the groupies to write a thesis paper on George Eliot, and that's never going to happen.
Never, ever going to happen. But I just found that so, I don't know, I really enjoyed reading that. I thought, this explains why I've always liked her so much. There was just this cool, nerdy quality about her that I really liked.
I didn't think she was nerdy. I thought she came across as
not bohemian. Nerdy. Not nerdy and that
I know what you
sort
mean.
Of, you know what I mean? Like, she's just, I don't know. She was just so much her own person and didn't really compromise who she was for the sake of fame either.
I did appreciate that she was honest, that she probably overdid it a little bit in the beginning about being a little angry for and just anti whatever. So they're interviewed
by
one of the melody makers or whatever, or somebody. And they just go out of their way, everything but the girl, she and her husband, to live like poor paupers. They've got this non-functioning oven or heating system. They're freezing and they're just living on a floor like the poorest bohemians. Yeah. And even she, in hindsight, realizes, I think that, I don't know. I think I might have been, I could have turned it down a little bit. And she was angry. And she, I got to mix it. The one thing, I like that we've, an ongoing theme of our show is where, if you and I had a big, huge dinner party, where would we seat these people, right? Would we want them close to us or far away? I feel like I do want Tracy Thorne close to me at my table because... In so many ways, I do feel a kindred spirit. But I think she and I would get in an argument very quickly. And I don't think it would be safe to seat her near me. Because, and you know where I'm going with this.
There's
just like every 50 pages, she has to throw in some feminist thing. Or just for no good reason. She's in a producer studio. And she also didn't seem to appreciate things a little bit. It kind of like, she gets to record in Abbey Road Studios, okay? I'm sorry, but if you get to record in Abbey Road Studios, that should be cool. I'm sorry. It just should be like, oh my gosh, this is, I just need to take a moment. I don't even know if I can. So she comes out to LA because they're going to try to mix it up and get a new producer. And to her credit, when the LA producers give them suggestions, they take them. They're like, there's no point in coming out to LA and doing this LA thing if we're going to just reject every idea they've got, even if it's not something we like. And I thought that was like a humble thing to do. But so the guy he's talking to the producer, somebody, and he says, wow, you recorded in Abbey Road. And he makes some comment about the Beatles, obviously, as one would. And she just knee-jerk, oh, I hate the Beatles. And she just had this thing. I'm like, really?
Yes,
really?
Yes.
You hate the Beatles. You haven't written one tune I can hum. And you're casually dismissing the greatest band of all time. I'm gonna chalk that up to just youth because we've all been at an age where you just feel like you need to be contentious in some way. You need to define
and
yourself.
Says that.
She does.
And she says that. She does say that. She does say, you know, I felt that I was just sometimes saying, like, looking back, you know, this is her looking back. And she says, you know, I think that there was a point where we were just being angry for the point of being angry and saying things to real, you know, to get people on under people's skin. And you know, I don't hold that against her.
I don't. I think, we're all young.
Like, you know, we've all said stuff. I mean, I think to some degree we still say things like that from time to time, all of us. And is it right? No, it's stupid. I mean, we all do it, right?
It's stupid.
It's just,
I have said incredibly stupid things.
Trying to be cool or trying to be different or edgy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we all will say those sorts of things. So I thought, oh, well, you know, in fact, when I read that, I laughed because I kind of felt I knew where that was coming from.
Right.
I could have seen myself saying something similar had I been her, like, oh God, here's this guy fawning all over the Beatles. Oh my God, I hate the Beatles. They're the worst band ever. You know, I could totally see how someone would say that. So I thought, okay, I get it.
You get her.
I get her.
Yeah, that was my only kind of like, here we go. And you know what, too? Because the music is so benign. This aggressive posture she'd take from time to time. It just seemed like, what is this? Your cup of tea. Your music sounds
like
tepid water, but you're going to put on this angry air and say these ridiculous things.
It does not sound like tepid water, but I will say
this.
It does.
I'll challenge you. Go listen, anybody, to the band and see.
Well, here's the thing, though. The thing that did crack me up about that is because, true, I mean, what I felt was, you know, the earlier music, if you listen to any of the earlier music, there's a lot of bossa nova, which I like. I love that sound too. I really do like that sound a lot too. But nonetheless, you know, she is saying all of these things. Her look was a little bit more, you know, punk too, the way she looked back in those early days. Like, the look didn't always necessarily match the music, right?
No, it really didn't. You would never guess. By the packaging on the outside.
And so it was really interesting that they are so antagonistic and they're always saying all of these crazy things to try and get people worked up.
Can you imagine listening to them talk to you for an hour and then like, oh, okay, let's hear the music then. And it's just...
Bossa Nova.
We recorded this in our bedroom yesterday after little biscottis.
With Earl Grey.
Yeah. You hate the Beatles, and this is all right. Screaming about women and your lack of place in the world, and
well, I mean, and it's something that I think she does continuously ponder, right? And she has all of these questions and things that she's fighting even later on in terms of, what is my place? And I think that was the one, also the overriding theme throughout the book, that she's always almost trying to find her place. She doesn't always quite know where she fits. The record companies don't know where they fit.
They don't.
She herself doesn't know where she fits, which I found really interesting. And, you know, Christian, I think the older I get, the more I feel that, you know, I sometimes, and I don't know if it's just me or if it's just us people, we are all like this to some degrees, but perhaps some of us are more vocal about it than others. But I do feel that age doesn't always necessarily take away those feelings of, I don't want to say inadequacy, but where our place is in the world, right? What is that place? You know, is it this? Is it the other? Is it something that I'm still looking to find? You know, and you get that from her too. Like, throughout her life, she's in this constant state of trying to identify what she should be doing, where she belongs. And I wonder if that's just something that is a condition that we are all stricken with, but again, some of us just verbalize it more than others, or is it only certain people that feel that way? Like, I don't know, you know, we don't come across this, or we haven't come across this in a lot of other books, but I do feel that this was a strong theme throughout her book, you know, trying to find her place.
Yeah. Especially because when they have hits, they have hits in the weirdest ways.
Yes.
So they do a random cover of a Rod Stewart song,
yes,
which becomes like this big hit. And so she does That happens. And then the big hit that they have with Everything But the Girl, she says to the reader, I know you've heard this song. And honestly, I couldn't remember hearing it vaguely. I went to go listen to it, Martha, and I just vaguely, like, this kind of sounds familiar. But some guy remixes one of her songs and just randomly plays it in a club, and it gets traction, and it just grows from the ground up into this huge worldwide hit. I can't imagine how much money that produced.
Oh, but again, man, it's like I can't either.
Yeah, they didn't try at all. They never tried ever to have hits. And what I, you know what was interesting? She does a really great job of really, really explaining how, in England anyway, your value and the way in which a company, a record company, treats you is moment to moment tied to your latest success. The second you don't have success, you now are not invited on Top of the Pops. We are now giving you less of a crew to take you to tour. The hotels are instantly not as good.
Yes.
The second you've got a hit, they'll just turn it back on again and treat you. And she seemed to take that at face value. You know, I guess you're not entitled necessarily to anything, but the nakedness with which that operated was really interesting.
Yes.
And you're back on Top of the Pops. So people calling up to you and telling you how great you are. And then the next day you don't have a hit and you're playing in Japan to nobody. It was odd. Their career is so strange.
It really is. I think it's the strangest career that we've read about, because everything else, I think everyone else that we've read about up until now, and correct me if I'm wrong, Christian, but I feel that they have, you know, other bands, other people we've read about, they had, you know, sort of the rough start. Right. They have that rough start. Then they get this huge level of success. And then sometimes it kind of starts dwindling, and then maybe it picks up a little bit. But but once they've had that level of success, it always kind of stays there, in the sense that people recognize them. They know who they are. They're in the wider consciousness. Right. Not this band. In their case, it's ebbed and flowed really interestingly.
Yeah.
And it's never really been defined as one thing or the other. And that was really, I found that to be very different from what we've read up until now as well. And, you know, there was a moment in the book, going back to this, about, you know, sort of their success. It's one hit, and then it kind of just dies down, and then it picks up again. There was one point in the book where I thought of you, and I think you know what part this was, when they go to see Galaxy 500.
Oh my God, you have no idea how excited I was to read that, Martha.
Why don't you tell us that story?
Well, I forget where they are in their career, but
at this point, their Rod Stewart hit has happened already. It's already happened.
Yes.
And they're back to being, again, Everything But the Girl. I mean, they always were, but this one big hit is no longer on the airwaves.
You know, since I'm best friends with Dean, I got to ask him that.
You've got to ask him about this.
I do.
Yes.
So she goes to see Galaxy 500, which was the most exciting thing ever, maybe. It was my favorite moment all time, because it's such a specific small... This book had so many of those. I mean, Orange Juice, Edwin Collins, my favorite people. She's a fan of my favorite people.
Right.
And she goes to see Galaxy 500, when they, of course, were the short time Galaxy 500. But, I mean, she doesn't say anything more about the band, except that she feels... I think people... They size her up and basically look at her to say, why are you don't have the credibility anymore to be at this show. You're not, your music just is lame and weird. And she feels like she feels criticized and really uncomfortable and insecure. She wonders, should I be at a Galaxy 500 show?
Yes.
Have I lost my ability to be here? I'll ask Dean. I'll go, did you think it was lame that she was?
You should. He is your best friend after all. You've got that direct line to him. Just send him a text.
Yeah.
But the thing this moment is brought on, this questioning is brought on, because there are two guys standing next to her. Mm-hmm. And one of them starts singing the Rod Stewart song. And poking fun at the fact that they covered it. Yep. And so she starts wondering, you know, what is my credibility lost because I did that song? Yeah. Like, what's wrong? What is it? And so,
what's funny, Martha, is that Galaxy 500 covered so many songs. That every album, they covered one or two songs by different people. They were so That was the kind of an irony in that moment.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting, right? Yeah. Because then at this point, she does have every right to be there in the sense that mm-hmm. this band that she likes has done the exact same yeah. thing. Maybe she should have said that to the guys that yeah, were being snarky.
She probably didn't know.
No, she's too polite. She's too polite to have done
that. They covered a George Harrison song. They covered, famously, the Ceremony by New Order.
Yes.
Jonathan
told me
Richman.
About that.
Uh-huh. And Yoko Ono, actually, one of their best covers.
What yeah. Yoko Ono song did they cover?
Yeah. Listen, the Snow is Falling. It's like the high point of their third and final album. It's so,
oh my.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's a B-side. Can you imagine a Yoko B-side? I mean.
I something tells me, though, that it's probably a good version.
Oh, it's outstanding. Highly recommended.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I really enjoyed the book. Do you have anything more you want to say about the band?
No, it's definitely one of my favorites, this one. It's definitely one of my favorites. I feel like we hadn't read a book like this in a while, to be honest. Yeah. It really, I
bet
know,
you Morrissey has read this. Because it's
you
so
has.
Well written. And
I
it's,
bet
it's
you
similar.
Has.
Yeah, it's so literary. And
yeah.
I bet he's read this.
I bet
he, like
he has too. Yeah, no, mm-hmm. this is a really good book. I highly recommend it. Whether or not you're a fan of Everything But the Girl, I think that this book will strike a chord in a lot of people. It's very well written. It's very thoughtful. It's very, I don't know. I just really enjoyed it. It resonated with me in a very big way.
Mm-hmm. I will say so when we started reading it, I had zero feeling for it whatsoever. I'm like, okay, here's just, you know, I had no expectations, of slightly checked out, but immediately she became such an interesting person. I was really, really wanting to like the music because I liked who I'm discovering. I like this person I'm reading about.
Yes.
I just wish I wish that had happened. Yeah, I like the Aww. Night and day cover. I like the night and day cover.
Well,
I like that earlier stuff more.
Yeah, the earlier stuff is mm-hmm. really good. And like I said, I did not know. I came to them in 1996 when mm-hmm. Walking Wounded was released, and I did not know that they had other music. I want to say that it was one of my brother's friends who told me that they had other music, and then mm-hmm. I started listening to it. And I liked it. And I there's something about those early songs that I think highlight her voice even more. Mm-hmm. And so I like it. And I really do like her voice. But Walking Wounded, I really love that. I just really, really love that album.
Got it. I'm going to check out Marine Girls, actually.
Yeah, me too. You know, mm-hmm. I meant to do that. And I just, I didn't, I just haven't. And but I want to. I want to. Something tells me that I'm really going to like it based on what she wrote about that band. And mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to hearing the rawness of that music, too.
It might be better. Just like Galaxy 500, I'll bring it back to that. There's something raw about them that spoke to me. Maybe I'll like it more.
Yeah, there's something about that raw and that intensity when people are discovering their voice, too,
you know,
that I think makes their music unique.
One last thing is that band obviously breaks up for not really clear reasons. She just says that
what
they
band?
Have
I'm sorry.
Marine Girls.
Oh, right.
And you're never really 100% sure why it ends. It just looks like they have one or two arguments. And after one argument, I guess nobody makes the phone call anymore to resume. And then after too much time, it's all just over. And then she tells the story of somebody, I think it was her, purposefully getting all of the Marine Girls back together again to kind of hash out the ending and maybe air grievances and have closure. What was really interesting about that experience, though, she tells us that they come together and it's warm in the beginning, and then it gets tense as they kind of return to their grievances.
Yes.
And she concludes by saying that nothing's really actually resolved. That
yes.
attempt fails. And I thought that was true to life, and it was satisfying to read that for a change. So often we read, then I got the closure and blah 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 blah. I like that this one.
Sometimes you don't.
Yeah, and she says sometimes it's just it is what it is,
and you have to accept it.
Yeah, I enjoyed reading that.
Yeah, I did
too.
Sounded
like a weird meeting over tea.
Yes. No. And she says that they start out very civil. Everything is mm-hmm. very nice. But that, and it doesn't sound like it was necessarily a screaming match or anything like that. No. But it does sound like things just weren't resolved.
Yeah.
Well, that's just life, right? Sometimes things aren't resolved and you just have to accept them and move on. And and that's the best you can do.
That's the best that you can do is just move on. That's a song that Christopher Cross's Academy Award winning hit for Arthur.
Oh, really? How come I didn't know the melody? I know the song. Well, why didn't it?
I think trying to hurt my feelings. It's working.
Oh, no, I'm not.
You know, the one about New York City. La da 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 do in New York City.
Okay, now I hear it.
The best that you can do.
Okay, there. That's what I needed. I needed.
Song love. It would be a lot better if I didn't have a cold.
I know, but it's okay. It still sounded lovely. You see, now I get it. Now I didn't when you just sang that little part.
Got it.
Yes.
Alrighty.
We love this book. So it's this hasn't happened in a little while, Christian, where we both felt the same about a book.
Really?
I think so.
I believe you. I'm just... Huh.
I think it's been a little while since we both really enjoyed the same book this much.
Yeah. This wouldn't make sense, though. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we're friends again.
Oh, we're friends again. We didn't leave things unresolved.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. Yeah, we're more successful in that area. You know, it'd be great to meet her and find out she's actually just a horrible diva. And at that lunch, she's just screaming and shouting these dumb bitches. She's just beating up her husband and horrible. So funny.
No, I think it's very unlikely.
I'm sure it is. It
would be hysterical to find out that.
Then I'd want her for sure near my table.
It'd be hysterical if she was really the one that was like yelling and oh my gosh. She was when everything but the girl ended in whatever year that was, it wasn't all just very matter of fact. It was like, I'm done with this shit. Yeah. I don't want to do this anymore.
Stupid YouTube punk asses. I bet she wanted more money and they wouldn't give it to her. I'm the draw, you morons, you Irish morons.
She was like, if I can't have...
Forget it.
I'm not going to do it. Bono.
Right. And it wasn't George Michael at all. It was just like Uber bringing her Greek food.
It was a guy that looked like George Michael. It was a guy that looked like George Michael.
That she hired to come to this... school
who just happened to be wearing sunglasses.
Here's
and
what
have
I want
stubble.
You to say, don't screw it up, you moron.
I want to impress my mom friends.
Yeah, okay, god, all right. And all she gives is payment is like a signed photograph of herself.
Oh, man. You know what's really interesting? I love the fact that I loved how down to earth she sounds and just how cool she sounds. And then I realized that I also really, it's these extremes for me. You know, I love these sort of really cool down to earth people, right? Like I loved the book. That she was great. Mm-hmm. But then I was thinking about Mariah Carey and like the difference between them. And I also really love Mariah, right? Because she is so over the top and she's just who she is. And I think what it comes down to is that when people are just who they are, regardless of whether it's this really down-to-earth rock star or this super diva, it's about that, right? It's about these people just being true to who they are. And I think that that resonates through these books as well. And that's what makes them appealing and what you end up liking, I think, when people are just... who they are. I don't know.
Well, thank you for joining us. We don't know what we're going to be reading next time, but we will. We do.
As
like
always.
Like Tracy, we read things. So go check out Marine Girls. Go start a band. Go write a book.
Yes, and write a book. Write good songs that we can all fall in love with.
Yes, or cover Rod Stewart songs. It's up to you.
Or that, whatever, yeah. Whatever you want.
Yeah. Speaking for myself and only myself, because I cannot speak for Martha, thank you for listening, and I will see you next time.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Goodbye.